Welcome to the 11th episode of Redemption, a podcast series to save deposit return systems. Today, we examine the 10th and final practice from A Guide to Modern Deposit Return Systems, 10 Essential Practices, which you can find at bottlebillreimagined.org. This 10th essential practice deals with the management of material flow and financial data. Let's go to the guide to see how this practice is articulated. Management of material flow and financial data facilitates clearing, a computer-based exercise where deposit containers registered at the point where they enter the market are matched with the units returned. Once this calculation is complete, the container has been cleared. Clearing is essential not only for operations, but also for data management and reporting compliance. Typically, information technology providers use software developed for the specific system. The information collected is linked to a central database management system to ensure timely tracking and accountability for each container. A defining feature of modern DRSs is the use of technological platforms to reconcile the number of empty containers returned with those sold, as well as the refund of deposits against those collected. This not only establishes a high bar for transparency and accountability, but also achieves something few waste or material management systems can: unit-specific tracking. To help us all understand the somewhat complicated aspects of this practice, I was delighted to speak again with ReLoop CEO and co-founder, Clarissa Murawski, who is such a clear communicator on all things DRS. And now we're going to dive deep into management of material flow and financial data, which we often call clearing. Can you explain to the listeners how the practice of clearing a beverage container works and why it's so important in a modern deposit return system?
In a deposit return system, the beverage packaging term called clearing typically refers to the process of reconciling and settling financial transactions related to the return and recycling of the beverage containers. So think about those beverage containers. Again, I'll bring up Germany as an example, or lots of other just systems here, you know, 20 to 25 cents a unit. These are quite valuable when you think about there being billions and billions. So the clearing process plays a critical role in ensuring that the appropriate parties are compensated for their involvement in the system. The clearer is either that central system operator, they take on that role, and it's a bunch of computers, literally. It's a bunch of computers all receiving data from machines and processing facilities that are manually running those containers through another machine. And all that data is being uploaded to that central clearinghouse. So the first thing that it does is it does that transaction reconciliation that I explained to you. It involves knowing how many deposits were paid and how many deposits have been paid out. There's also that financial settlement that has to occur. So after reconciling the transaction, the clearinghouse facilitates the financial settlement amongst the stakeholders involved in the system. And it includes the manufacturers, the distributors, the retailers, handling fees being paid out, and potentially other entities in the system. There's compensation distribution. This has to do with, again, taking those collected deposits and distributing them out. If you ever look at a system, there's always some sort of central entity. It may be the operator, it may be a separate entity that is managing all that data and ultimately making sure that the money ends up in the right place. Then there's data management, understanding which ones were returned, when were they returned, et cetera. And that all gets uploaded and sent to the government. So it's about transparency, accountability, accuracy within the system. There's also a need for a clearinghouse when you have a dispute resolution. So of course, you're going to have retailers that are going to potentially dispute and say, oh no, you picked up three bags, not one bag. You owe me handling fees for three bags. So because the system is tracked throughout the system and there's one clearinghouse that has the data, they are able to involve themselves in any dispute resolution. And it's kind of nice that you have one central clearinghouse that does that. And just generally, it's about system integrity. So clearing contributes to that overall integrity and efficiency of the deposit system. It ensures that all financial aspects of the system are handled accurately, helping to build that trust among stakeholders and encouraging widespread participation in the program. It's super important. And I can tell you, I have been in Europe now for almost 10 years, and I have met with countless deposit return operators that are operating as clearinghouses, and their brand owners, the very brand owners that pay them for the system, are perfectly happy. They're happy because they know they're part of a super rigorous system where no one's cheating them. There's no fraud because there's rigor in the system. A lot of the issues that I hear about in America are not issues because we just have more rigor in the system.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of it comes back to the data and the financial management of recording of that data, management of that data, reporting of that data. I mean, one thing which actually has come up quite a bit recently in discussions here is what is the value of the system, right? Which means what is the amount of money flowing through the system?
You can run the math yourself, but I just happen to remember for France. So this is a country of about 65 million people, which is what is that, like a fifth of American population, roughly. So I remember running the numbers for France based on a 20-cent deposit. And every 10% of the beverage packaging that is in circulation represents about 150 million euros. So there is a hell of a lot of money in circulation at one time. And that is why you need that system integrity.
So you're talking about the value of the packaging.
I'm talking about just the deposits alone. If there's 10% of the beverages that are sold in a day are unredeemed, that represents, let's just say 10% in a year represents 150 million euros. So you can see that there's a lot of money that is ultimately sitting somewhere, sitting with the system operator, earning interest, which is very, very important part of the financial model, is they're like a bank. They're holding that deposit until you come back with your containers. And if I wait 12 months and I come back once with all my containers, then they have actually earned interest off the deposit out of my pocket. The bigger the country, the more volume, the more money you're talking about. But it's definitely part of that financial outlook.
We've talked a little bit about traceability, the ability of a modern deposit return system to track individual beverage containers is incredibly unique as far as other material management programs and strategies, and certainly in comparison to curbside recycling. Why is that important? How does that work in Europe today? And how could that bring some major improvements to the US in terms of management of material post-consumption?
Well, traceability is important for beverage containers because the beverages are highly circular. So if you're not refilling them, then you should be making sure as a beverage producer that they're ending up ultimately back in your own containers. That is why traceability is so important. If we want to have that, what we call closed loop recycling, because remember, if you do that closed loop recycling, you do it once and you're getting nine back. Every time you're getting nine back and you're putting it back on the market, you've got recycling. I mean, that has got cumulative benefits or exponential benefits year over year. You're getting more and more value from the same material going round and around and around. And that is ultimately super beneficial for producers, because what it means for producers is that they can procure less virgin material. And that is why for beverage containers in particular, it's really important around that traceability. So that's why we are so obsessed with this concept of get as many as you can back and get them right back into a closed loop. We need more glass in glass. Glass manufacturers want more glass in glass. So let's facilitate systems where we can have these circular materials. Bottle to bottle glass, I mean, it can just go around and around to infinity, basically, if you kept the quality of the material. You could just keep melting it down, forming a new bottle, melting it down, forming a new bottle. So that is why, especially for these three materials, that traceability piece is absolutely critical. And, you know, you can look in different countries in America, in Europe, recycled content levels currently for aluminum, glass, and PET are totally suboptimal. And we absolutely have to increase them.
Compared with the technical ease by which they can be mechanically recycled. So we're losing, 100%. You mean suboptimal, and that these are great to recycle materials. We're losing a lot of them, not just to downgrading recycling outcomes, like you say, but to landfill and to incineration. And the curbside system doesn't really have any traceability, right? Once it's collected, especially in a single stream setting, you're not even able to really drill down on the composition of the single stream recycling stream and then what happens to it, right? There's no way to follow the bottle.
It's a little bit easier for aluminum cans, let's say, because you can use an eddy current and extract them. They're ending up in a smelter anyway, but it is extremely difficult for plastics because, you know, when you're collecting a blue box material, you're mixing everything together. So you cannot put plastic back into plastic unless you have that sort of basic guarantee that it is not contaminated with some potential product that it shouldn't be sitting next to. And the same with glass, you know, if we want to do proper recycling, we need to color sort and we need to keep that glass clean so we can stick it right back in a furnace. The minute you stick it in a blue box, especially in North America with single stream, that material is lost. You're going to use it for landfill cover, maybe in roadbed. But again, just like the example with the fleece jacket, that's one use. So you've lost that incredibly versatile circular material forever.
Managing the flow of containers involves so many moving parts. Can you talk about the role of the regulatory agency in oversight of clearing and the role that the producer should play as well?
Clearing is a computer-based system of producers registering, and here the government should play a role to assist the clearinghouse when they recognize that there are free riders in the system. They need to go and make sure that they're properly reporting into the system. The clearing has to meet certain requirements to ensure that there is a legitimate set of transactions occurring. All this can be reported to the government, as I said, that needs to be fully aware of how the system works. These systems need to be audited to ensure that the clearing is honest, because of course there is, as we mentioned, a lot of money at stake, and you need to make sure that every single point, whether it's that transaction reconciliation, the financial settlement, the compensation distribution, is kind of meeting that, call it mass balance. It has to all equal out. It has to follow, and there has to be no points where there's material lost or there's any double counting. It's done in an easy way because we've got the barcodes and we know exactly how many of the different barcodes are placed on the market. So there is that automatic in real time situation where anything that looks a bit suspicious should pop up. We know, especially where you have historic data, because we have different variations that happen during the year where certain sales occur and then you've got certain returns. So again, that clearing and that transaction reconciliation, historically, you can see where there's something funny happening. You can track that. And it's certainly in the interest of the clearinghouse to see if there's an error in the system, but it's also their requirement that they need to report up to the government and prove that they're meeting all of the requirements. Now, typically, you have a third party verifier that signs off on what the clearinghouse will report. And I don't actually know how often they have to do those reports, but it's probably something like monthly, not more.
There's an active body that's regularly monitoring the clearing activities. Yeah. You know, even if there's annual reporting, there's a verification mechanism. As you said, there likely is a third party that's doing the bookkeeping exercise, but then there's a human, whether it's an auditing company or it's the regulatory body, that's seeing how things check out, right? As a stopgap, as a check and balance.
Yeah. And as I said, it's because there's so much money on the line that those systems are built in from the get-go. There's also been some, again, on underreporting, there's been some analysis done to show that more auditing actually pays off, that the more auditing you do, the more likely you are that there'll be better reporting and that there'll be more money in the system.
It makes sense. You've got assets, you know where they are, you know how to track them, you know how to get them. You know, the better the system, the more cost-effective it'll be. And money put into auditing is how you keep your house in order.
Totally. And, you know, we talk about free riding and companies that are knowingly underreporting, which was the example I gave earlier, but that's not always the case. Sometimes there are companies that are unknowingly having to comply and they didn't even know about it. Or they might be a shop that is importing beverages from another country and doesn't know that they need to report on behalf of. So sometimes these clearing activities will identify barcodes in the system that keep popping up, but they won't get money back. That's one thing that the system will allow for, is that you can't stick a container that hasn't paid into the system. There will be no deposit coming out of that container. But usually we would find those out because the consumer would be like, hey, didn't I pay a deposit on this? And I bought it in a shop. And typically you start to hear about the brands that are not part of the system. And then we have that government enforcement that can bring them in.
That's where registration comes in, right? And having really robust, as part of the clearing requirements, the management of material flow and financial data, it starts with the registration. And right now we have really, in most US systems, sort of scant requirements on registration, or at least very little follow through in the way of enforcement. So what I'm hearing from you is having kind of a universal registration where, you know, all the RVM providers, all the places where the containers are received, are provided with all those barcodes. I mean, right now in the US, we don't have that whatsoever, right? You're sort of at the producer's mercy to get their barcode so you can program the RVM to take it back. What happens when you have more of a universal or mandatory registration of barcodes
with the regulatory body? It just means that if you want to sell in the jurisdiction, you have to register. And once you've registered, you have to pay the fee. There's usually a small admin fee to start for registration. And then you just pay the fees that I mentioned earlier, like whether it's 1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent. And that's just part of your obligation. It's just kind of basic, actually. I never understood why they did things the way they do in the east of America. It's a little bit old fashioned and very inefficient.
Thanks to all our listeners who are so committed to learning about modern deposit return systems and the environmental and economic benefits they bring to our communities. In this 11th episode of Redemption, ReLoop CEO Clarissa Murowski helped us understand how clearing a beverage container works and why a modern DRS can do something no other waste or material management systems can: unit-specific tracking. Thank you for joining us for these 11 episodes of Redemption. You are now a bona fide expert on the 10 essential practices required for a modern deposit return system. In future episodes, we will continue to explore other critical aspects of modern deposit return systems, including how DRS can help us all move to reuse. Stay tuned. In the meantime, don't forget to visit bottlebillreimagined.org to download the guide or subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge about these 10 essential practices for a modern deposit return system, we can move good bottle bills forward.